This is the Dental Elements Podcast, the podcast that is for everyone in the profession. Join us for a refreshing conversation with innovators, collaborators, and inspirers. Cheers to that. Hi, welcome to the season 6 of the Dental Elements Podcast. Today, our guest is someone who's dedicated to demystifying the world of taxes and helping you keep more of what you earn. She's a powerhouse with over 2 decades of experience in strategic tax planning. With her unique pedigree coming from a family of physicians and married to one, she knows firsthand the financial challenges that professionals face. She's the founder and lead tax strategist at Cerebral Tax Advisors and the author of the book Advanced Tax Planning for Medical Professionals. Today, she's here to share golden nuggets on various topics from real estate investing and ensuring your business is IRS compliant to implementing straightforward changes that can save taxes and escalate wealth. Whether it's for your established venture, your thriving side gig, or to understand how retirement planning can turn into tax savings, Alexis Galati has got you covered. Prepare your notes because this episode is going to be a treasure trove of tax saving tactics that could potentially transform your financial landscape. Alexis, welcome to the Dental Elements Podcast.
Well, thank you so much, Cindy, for having me here. So yes, I am the lead strategist and founder of Cerebral Tax Advisors. And I started Cerebral because my husband is a physician. And when he was basically a year and a half out from finishing up his residency, I saw the writing on the wall. At that point, I'd been working for like 12, 13 years in local and regional CPA firms. And I really wanted to learn why the Bill Gates and the Warren Buffetts of the world were, you know, at that 15% tax bracket or less, basically. You know, with Chris going to be, my husband Chris finishing up residency soon, and, you know, we were going to be in a different bracket. And with even me starting, you know, my own practice, you know, what other things could I be doing in order to lower my taxable liability? So that's really where Cerebral was born. And it was funny enough, my husband is a neurosurgeon, and my father is a neurologist. And so that's kind of where I got Cerebral from. It was within the family. I really built Cerebral around tax planning, you know, proactively working throughout the year to create the tax liability that I want, which was as legally and as low as possible. So yeah, right now, you know, we focus on, you know, helping with setting up businesses or keeping them going, helping to optimize. And when it comes to different types of strategies as well, not just, you know, trying to lower your own income through trying to deduct as many personal expenses as business deductions, but also looking at real estate investing as a tax strategy, or, you know, even other alternative investments like oil and gas, for example. So there are a lot of different areas that, like I said, the Warren Buffetts and the Bill Gates of the world are using that are really, they are available to the general public. It's just people don't know about them.
Correct. Yes. So I love to learn more and more tips and stuff that we don't know about. And that's great. So if somebody's starting up a business, what would you recommend that they do or don't do? Do you have some really important tips or strategies that people must do or must not do?
Yes. You know, probably the most important step when you're first starting your business is just deciding what sort of entity you should be. You know, that really dictates how you're going to be taxed. You know, if you're just going to be a sole proprietorship at first and maybe just have that single member LLC, you know, when you're an LLC, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be taxed as an S corp or a C corp or anything. You have to actually make that election for an S corporation or a C corporation. And so, but they're all taxed differently. And it's really important to know, okay, well, you know, are you going to, you know, be having employees? How much are you going to be earning? You know, things along those lines that can help decide, you know, liability wise for protection versus, you know, how it's going to be taxed to really help you save money. Saves tons of headaches in the future.
Yes. And so for businesses, so you're talking about real estate. I'm really into real estate as well. And I'm kind of getting into it more. And it's always been a passion of mine, investing in real estate. So when you say that, do you mean like for doctors or practice owners to have the real estate, like own the business that the practice is in? Are you talking about like rentals, or explain how we could invest in real estate, what some good strategies are for that as well?
Yeah, it can be Either or. So yeah, if you own the building that your practice is using, then that's a really great opportunity to shift some income from your business and that business be paying rent to the LLC that owns your building. And then you're using the expenses, you know, and depreciation of that building to help kind of shift income from the business over to the LLC. And then the LLC uses those expenses to offset that rental income. And so essentially you're able to write off a bunch of your income and not be taxed. So that's one strategy, but you know, maybe, you know, aren't able to purchase the location that your business is in, then you can use just like rental real estate, you know, whether it's residential or commercial, to potentially help lower your taxable liability. And so, you know, whether you go into long-term rentals or short-term rentals or real estate syndications, each one of those affects your tax situation differently.
Okay. So there's so many different aspects of that. I can see why somebody would need help. Like, how do you help people with those kind of situations? Or do you do for businesses to help them determine this kind of stuff? Do you help them decide where to invest and how to invest? Or is it more how to get the best bang for their buck when it comes to the taxes for what they already have, or a little bit of both? Is it like strategic?
Yeah, a lot of it depends on what they're currently doing and then what their goals are. So, you know, at Cerebral, we don't sell any products. We don't take any commissions or kickbacks. So everything is very education-based. I want you to know, like if we're talking about rentals, for example, well, I want you to know how that real estate is going to affect your tax situation, you know, because for example, with the IRS, you know, with rentals, the IRS assumes it's a passive investment unless you qualify for real estate professional status or you can do a short-term rental loophole. And so those can then change the character of how that income is taxed or even the losses are used to help save you money. And so if someone is like, hey, Alexis, I just want passive income. I don't want to have to spend more time. I'm already super busy. Well, then doing like a short-term rental or even trying to qualify for real estate professional status is probably not the right way to go, because that takes a certain amount of time. There are guidelines that the IRS needs to see for you to qualify for those two types of tax deductions. So it might be something more of, okay, well, maybe you do want to own your own practice building, you know, or you want to look at other investments that are going to just be passive, but have a really great return on investment. So we go and help with educating our clients on the different types of options based on their goals. And then we can, you know, help them in deciding, you know, which direction they want to go. And then once they decide what direction, then, you know, we're a white glove handholding type of service. So we will usher you through the proper steps and make sure it's done properly and then reported properly on your tax return.
Okay, that's great. Yeah. And I know about the Airbnb and the VRBO or Vrbo. And so that's great. The loopholes. What about like renting out your practice for a day? So like if you have a specialist come in for like a dentist, if they own a practice and they're not working on Fridays, would that apply like a short-term rental to have another like an endodontist come in and lease out that space for a day? Would that be considered short-term rental as well? Do you know? Just thought of that. We're talking about it.
Yeah, I think something like that would be, you probably just characterize it as more some lease income that's coming into the business. And so if you own that property, you know, there'd be different ways you could set it up basically. But I think probably the easiest just from a bookkeeping standpoint is to just have that as lease income coming into your main practice. And then you're just continuing to still expense all of the other, like, you know, property taxes and mortgage interest and stuff like that, the building's LLC. Because the thing is that even if you don't own the building, you have that space and you can sublet it, you know, then it's just part of your extra income to you.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense for sure. And so a lot of people in any profession really, but a lot of dental professionals work maybe part-time or maybe 4 days a week and they have extra time. So we have side gigs to kind of keep our brains stretched, as you know, it's about brains. So what would be some sticky tax situations when you have your business, but you also have like a side gig or another income. Would you want to combine the two or have two separate LLCs or any ideas on that?
Yeah, probably the major area that would have some stickiness is if you do earn some income on the side, but you have a practice that has employees, then you might have problems with trying to set up a retirement plan associated with the side gig income. Because if you have that side gig income and you want to, let's say, open up, hey, I just want to open up solo 401k, but you don't offer a retirement plan to your employees through your main practice, then you start butting up into ERISA rules. And these are rules that essentially protect the non-owners and the highly compensated employees from not being a part of a retirement plan that the owners have. And so if you know you have qualifying employees in your main practice, then and you try to open it up a retirement plan through the side gig, then you may have to include the employees in your main practice in that retirement plan. So that's going to be a very sticky and complicated situation. And if you do have your main practice and then you're doing some side income and you're thinking about retirement, then make sure you talk to a qualified, you know, third-party administrator or a retirement plan specialist or someone like us who specializes in retirement as well, to make sure that you do qualify and to, you know, jump any hurdles, help you jump with any hurdles to make it happen. Because maybe you want to actually start up a retirement plan for both sides of income. So then that way you can retain talent better, you know, have a more attractive benefits package.
Okay. So is that because it looks like you are being sneaky by setting up another business so you yourself can have retirement without having to include employees?
Exactly.
Is that kind of what that law is all about? Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
That makes sense. And since we're on the topic of retirement, what are some things that we could do to max out our retirement before we file taxes a certain amount of time after the end of the year to do that as well? Can you explain a little bit about that to me?
Yeah, definitely. So it depends on the type of retirement plan you have, but most retirement plans like SEP IRAs or 401ks or even defined benefit plans like cash balance plans, you have until the filing of your tax return, including extensions, to pay that amount, that employer contribution. So for like a 401k, for example, you usually have an employee deferral, which most people see that coming through their paycheck, and that's coming out of your pocket and making that money into it. So like for 2024, that's $23,000 is the max you can put in for your employee deferral. But then for the employer contribution, that amount, like I said, you have until the filing of the tax return as the employer to decide, okay, do I want to do some profit sharing? Is there some, you know, safe harbor match, et cetera? And then that way you can get a nice deduction on your tax return for that. And usually those sort of plans, especially if you have employees, you need to work with like a third party administrator and an actuary to do those annual calculations. But it's a really great way to take money out of the IRS's hand, put it into your retirement and get a nice tax deduction from it as well.
Yeah. So do you always recommend maxing out your 401k because it's pre-tax money, right? Because that way you're not paying taxes on it right at the time, right? So with that, what if somebody already filed their taxes and then they're just learning about this, or they didn't know that you could max out your money, or they came into more money, they want to put it into their retirement. Is it too late at that point to do that, or do you file an amendment, or what would you suggest at that point?
Yes. So unfortunately, let's say you didn't have any retirement plan set up at all for 2023. Yeah. And you filed your tax return already, your business return. Yeah. You're unfortunately out of luck, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't start now with 2024 and get things set up and make sure that everything's good to go, for 2024 deductions.
So it's a good time to talk to an advisor. So this way you do it correctly or to your benefit in 2024.
Yeah.
I know it seems like that's next year, but that's this year. Yes. That's great.
And especially when you have employees, there's usually a time frame you have to like give notice to your employees. And so usually that can be 30 to 60 days. So you definitely don't want to wait until year end to start this process.
Right. Okay. And then that's great. So what about diversifying? You talk about diversifying Warren Buffett. And so I've read that some of the top people that you're talking about, that they invest in kind of the competitors too. Like they'll invest in one thing, but they'll also invest in the other thing, that like apples and oranges. So that way, if one goes down, they're always winning. I mean, they're always losing, but they're always winning. Am I reading that or thinking about that correctly?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like what they're doing is this, like you said, diversifying their portfolio. You know, they're kind of hedging their bets in both spots. You know, the majority of people making the amount of money that, you know, the Warren Buffetts of Bill Gates of the world, of Jeff Bezos of the world make, they have so much money in assets, like so much value in their assets. They can take loans against their assets, and those loans are not taxable income. And so, you know, that they're almost like living off of these like forever loans, essentially. And so financial strategies like that are something that's a little bit more difficult for like a you and I to be able to do, because, you know, we might have some nice set of assets and everything, but I mean, they're living off of basically the value of, you know, their Amazon stock, or, you know, Musk with his, you know, with Tesla.
Okay. So they're would that kind of be like taking a loan off your own, like for people that aren't them, or maybe employees, or would that be like taking a loan out of your own 401k kind of, because you're paying yourself back?
Yes, kind of. The problem, I don't like the idea of ever taking loans from your retirement. That's just because, I mean, those are, you know, tax protected assets. And so they're growing tax free, and you should really, like, you know, leave them alone. Because if you have to take money out, then, you know, you're going to have to pay interest against it. And then you're not getting that tax free growth. So yeah, I know that some people will use their 401k or their retirement to like invest in real estate and things like that. But I personally don't like it.
Yeah. So to set aside and forget about it and let it keep going. Okay. And so what are some simple changes that businesses can do to help reduce their tax burden or their taxable income?
So yeah, when it comes to the deductions, yeah, you want to see what sort of personal expenses can actually be business deductions. You want to change your mindset to, hey, I just went to the grocery store, but I bought a packet of pencils. Guess what? Think that's a business deduction. Like, I should be really writing that off. But it's important too to keep track of all of your receipts. You know, a lot of people will just, you know, use their bank statements or their credit card statements. Those do not count. The IRS actually needs to see those itemized receipts, because if you go to Staples and buy $3,000 of something, they don't know if that's a computer or if that's gummy worms. You know, they're treated differently. So having that, you know, they don't have to be paper receipts. They can be digital receipts. But, you know, that's one area where if the IRS doesn't have it, they can technically go and deny the deduction. You know, and then taking a look at your situation, see, hey, I mean, maybe if you have children, you know, are they over the 7 years or older, then you might want to think about hiring through the business. So then that way you can shift income from your higher tax bracket down to their non-existent tax bracket. That's a wonderful way to not only shift income to them, get a deduction, but also for them that they can then put that money into like a Roth IRA for retirement, you know, or save for school.
Yeah, that's a great idea. So what about fear? Do people, you think that maybe they fear the IRS, or they feel fear being audited, so they don't actually write off as much as they should? So maybe instead of writing off too much, they're not writing off enough because they don't, you know, they don't trust, or they're fearful and they don't understand, you know, what they're right, what's there for them to write off.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, everybody is fearful of the IRS. They think like, oh my gosh, like I forgot to put $5 of interest on there, I'm going to go to jail. Like, right. That's definitely not the case. Fortunately and unfortunately, the IRS audit rates have just been so low for the past, you know, decade plus, because I mean, they're just woefully underfunded, especially if you have like an S corporation or a C corporation. The audit rates on those two types of entities are so much lower than like on a Schedule C. And so, you know, and I heard some people being like, oh, I won't do my home office deduction because that's a big red flag. And anything, if you qualify for something, if you follow the rules and you have the proper documentation, there's absolutely no reason why you couldn't take a home office deduction or any other deduction. I mean, it's even like doing a charitable deduction, you give $250 to your church, you need a receipt for that. And if you have the receipt, awesome, you've done it. But if you get audited and you don't have that receipt, then you're not going to get that deduction. So, you know, you just have to make sure that, you know, you understand, you just need to substantiate what you're doing and why you're doing it. And as a business deduction, as well as, you know, having that backup for it, and you'll be fine in front of the IRS. If there is something that you're wanting to deduct, you know, there's going to be some things that people just can't deduct. Like, you sometimes will have people that are like, oh, I, you know, maybe, you know, you have a dentist who, you know, has to buy a suit because he goes out to business meetings, or, you know, he's going to CEs that, you know, are business casual or things like that. And he's like, oh, well, I had to buy this suit because it's for work. Well, the IRS won't let you write that suit off as an expense. You can only do it if it's an actual like uniform. So like scrubs would qualify for something like that. In general, you're not going to be hopefully going out to the grocery store in your scrubs. Yeah. Although I do still see all the time, but it's, you know, it's not considered streetwear where a business suit would be. And right. So, you know, there's going to be some things that you might think like, oh, I have a business purpose for buying this, but mm-hmm. you have to look at it, you know, to be reasonable. And, you know, if you ever wonder like, oh, is this something, can I write off? Then you can talk to a tax professional, or even, you know, check out online, you know, groups that might provide, you know, some insight. But if it's something that you're not sure about, it might be a little sketchy.
Right. Yeah. And so scrubs and uniforms, maybe if the suit had, you had to wear it and it had like the logo of the company you're working for or something like that.
Yeah. If I buy like a like kind of like a fleece that I'm wearing now that has the company logo on it, then, you know, that
would go under marketing,
a reasonable right? deduction. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But if you're buying like a nice suit that you can wear essentially anywhere, then that's considered streetwear.
Conventions and CE, continuing education courses and trips, we like to learn and we need to learn. And it's actually required that we learn, which is good, right? So what about writing stuff off like that? Is there any changes with the new deductions as far as dining or food allotment?
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, I mean, the cost to fly you and your team out there is deductible. The hotel that you're going to get for them is deductible. Depending upon how your reimbursement or your policies, when it comes to meals, your team is going out and kind of doing their own thing. Or if you're, you know, doing a team dinner, you know, team dinners, like that would be a deduction, you know, for your team. And so, you know, for yourself, if you, let's say you're heading out there yourself and, you know, maybe you're by yourself, and then, you know, there, you can look at per diem rates as well, if it's over 50 miles away, and as opposed to you track your actual expenses, but there's also per diem rates for lodging and food and incidentals. And those are really great because if you, let's say you only spend $30 a day on your food, but the per diem rate for the city you're in is $60, then you can actually write off an additional $30 of deduction that you haven't even paid for. And just because the per diem rate is a lot more, and you just have to be really cheap and just go to like Chick-fil-A or something for dinner every single day.
Those are different in different areas or different cities, you said, the per diem rates?
Exactly. Yeah. If you Google per diem rates, there is a government website, I think it's a gsa.gov, that you can actually see by year in which cities what the rates are. So if there's no specific rate for the city, so like obviously New York City is going to be a lot more than Tulsa, Oklahoma. So if the rate isn't there for that city, then there is a standard amount that they show for every city that doesn't have its own qualifying rate.
I didn't know that. That's great to know. Let's see. What about alcohol? What about if you're out to dinner with your team and you know, you have a glass of wine, is that deductible or is that something you have to keep off of the receipt?
Yeah, that's deductible. Okay. So basically if it's something that's ordinary and necessary and tends to not be overly lavish.
Right. So not like a really fancy bottle of wine. Like every once in a while, if you're going to McDonald's and then you have like $500 bottle of wine, it's probably going to stand out, right?
Okay. You just got to look at it from the IRS's point of view, you know, is if you're not being, what I always say with meals, don't be greedy. You know, like, don't be writing off every single meal that you have. The traveling, yes, that's different. But like, if you're out and about in your hometown and like, oh, I can, this is a business meal, blah, blah, blah. Like, meals is one area that the IRS likes to nab people on, because people tend to get greedy with it. So just be reasonable.
Okay. And it could be the same as like the uniform thing. How do you have to prove that you're talking business, or how do you say that? Cause sometimes we joke like, oh, this is a business meeting. What do you have to show that that lunch was actually a business meeting? Do you just have to have notes about what the lunch was about, or what you talked about, or any meeting notes?
Yeah, you got it. Meeting notes. So when it was, where it was, who was there, what was discussed. And so, you know, sometimes what I'll do is I will just write a quick note on the actual receipt, who I was with, what was discussed, et cetera. And then I take a picture of that receipt. I got my receipt as proof that we were there and what was purchased, as well as, you know, the notes. And so it's all kind of in one spot.
Yeah, I like that. And there's different apps and stuff as well for keeping tracks of receipts. And then also you can just take a picture with your phone. As a tax advisor, what do you like to see if you're helping somebody with their taxes? Do you help people with their taxes? By the way, do you want to see like actual receipts, or do you prefer a certain app, or maybe you have an app, or what works best for you guys?
Yeah. So besides obviously planning, doing tax designs and to help go and reduce liability, we also provide compliance. So we do the tax preparation for personal returns and business returns. We're very big on organization and efficiency. And, you know, we have audit protection as well, bookkeeping, et cetera. But when it comes to the efficiency, a lot of it will have to do with your personal preference. My main goal as your advisor is that you just keep the receipt, whether it's a paper receipt, whether it's a digital receipt, whether you use an app, whether you don't. So for like me, I love using just Google Drive, and I have a folder tree. So it's, you know, it starts with 2024 receipts, and then I have subfolders under that for each of the different expense categories. And so if I'm out for that business meal, I can just take a picture with the Google Drive app and put it right into that subfolder for meals. And it's done, it's over with. I don't have to think about it again, unless the IRS asks for it. But, you know, if you use bookkeeping apps like QuickBooks Online, they have, as part of their services, they have their app that you can take a picture and it will pick up information from the receipt, like where it was, how much it cost, et cetera. And then, you know, save that picture of that receipt, as well as put the information into your bookkeeping system. So there are all different types. And really, for me, the most important thing is that my clients actually save the receipts.
Right. Even if it's in a shoebox full of paper receipts, you're just going to cause yourself a lot of work later, right?
Exactly.
Do you charge extra to go through those, or do you make people actually go through and organize everything before they give them to you? Or do they say you can just give a shoebox full of receipts to your accountant and they love going through them? But I can't see that being true.
No, we don't like going through them.
Yeah, so much easier just to do it like once a week, or or once a month, even kind of balance your books, right?
With all of any new client that comes on, if you're not already onto QuickBooks Online, we put your business onto QuickBooks Online, and that subscription's included in our services, because we don't want that to be a barrier to actually doing it. And then we tutor our clients how to do the income and expense categorizations. And then we go in monthly to do reconciliations of the bank and credit card and payroll, as well as right before we do our mid-year projection meeting, which is a planning meeting, as well as our year-end projection meeting. And then at tax time, we are doing full review of the book. So every 4 months, we do a full review of the book. So then that way we know we have good numbers for planning and for prep. And our clients know they have good numbers to make business decisions on. But we also have full-fledged, you know, monthly bookkeeping packages where they're getting a clean set of financial statements every single month as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, definitely needed, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Organization is key to happiness. Yeah, definitely. So, you know, if you are thinking about starting your own business, or you're having that side gig, you know, definitely check out, if you go to cerebraltaxadvisors.com/dental, that I've created a page specifically for Dental Ailment Podcast. So then that way you can get some additional free information on some worksheets for different expenses that are very specific to physicians, as well as there, you're able to contact me for cerebral tax advisors if you feel that you want to have a white glove, handholding type of service in terms of, you know, your business and your personal taxes. And then we also, I also have Cerebral Wealth Academy, which I developed for those that are more do-it-yourselfers. And if you do have that side gig, or you do locums, or you have your own practice, that course goes through how to, you know, choose your entity, how to set up your businesses and deductions and credits, goes through retirement, and it even goes through like how your income is taxed. So then that way you're able to understand the different avenues and strategies that you'd be able to take. So I love going and teaching and making sure that my clients know their options. And so then that way they're making the most of their situation.
Yeah. So that's Wealth Academy, and it's on that website, that link, right?
Yes. On cerebraltaxadvisors.com/dental.
Okay. Yeah. We'll put that in the show notes and then also on our website. So it's easy to find it as well. And thank you for helping supply that information. That's great. And we need more financial education, right? So the more we can teach each other and share, the better. Obviously there's a lot to know out there, and it could be scary stuff and it could be costly. So thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to the show. Check us out, YouTube, also wherever you listen to your podcasts, we are there as well. And the website, rootyouon.com, where you can find all of the episodes, as well as all of the guests and bios. So even if you're not listening to the episodes, if you want to go there, you can go by topic and connect yourself with some other professionals who might be able to assist you, or you might be able to assist them. So check it out. Thanks for listening or watching.